From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire Congressman Chris Pappas is with us today, a Democrat representing the state's 1st District. He's a former executive counselor from Manchester, where he also managed his family's restaurant and catering business. Now, like every member of Congress, he's knee-deep in coronavirus response, efforts to bolster small businesses, healthcare, and his district's cities and towns. And he's been talking with activists and police here in New Hampshire about the protest movement that has spread across the country in response to the recent deaths of Black Americans at the hands of law enforcement. This hour, we'll talk about all that and more, and we'd like to add your voice to our conversation. Send us an email. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or call us. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-6477. And Congressman Pappas joins us from his home office in Manchester. Congressman Pappas, welcome back. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Laura. It's nice to be with you as well.
Well, I'd like to start, Congressman, with this past week of demonstrations around the country, around the globe, really, related to the killing of George Floyd at the hands of police. And I know you've been talking to constituents in your district about this, Congressman. What are you hearing first from protest organizers?
Well, this is a deeply disturbing incident, and I think it strikes to the core of every American who has seen that videotape, the 8 minutes and 46 seconds that that police officer had his knee on the neck of George Floyd and murdered him. He's been charged, other officers have been charged, and they need to be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. There is no room in the United States for that type of injustice, but unfortunately, what I've been hearing from protesters and what I know is that there are injustices committed each and every day against members of the Black community in this country. And we cannot lose this moment as an opportunity to have a bigger conversation about where we need to go as a country, engaging different aspects of our community, including law enforcement, in a constructive conversation that can lead to fundamental change. That's what these organizers are looking for. I've had the opportunity to connect with the young organizers who put together the march and vigil in Manchester, peaceful protests that drew hundreds of community members together, people from diverse backgrounds. And at their young age, they're really focused on not only how can we get out our message and show that this is a grave injustice that's been committed, but what are the next steps we can take to get to that point where we're actually changing policies and ultimately, changing the face of justice in America. And I think that's, really forward thinking, and I support them. And I think we have to do all we can to lift up their voices and continue to listen, learn, and understand.
Well, in a statement you released on the protests, you said, reflecting kind of what you just said, Congressman, quote, "This is a time for us to listen, learn, and understand the experiences of our fellow Americans and seek constructive change." And I'd like to dig into what you mean by constructive change, because we have heard from Granite Staters this week who are worried that this moment is going to pass, that without constructive change, as you said, what can you do in your role, Congressman, to ensure that doesn't happen? What are some of the specific changes that you can help promote?
Well, what I told Rennell and Terrell and Elijah and others that I've spoken with that have been involved in organizing these protests is that I want to continue to hear from them, to understand their experiences and work with them on changes that we can make at all levels of government. And I think there are things we can do in Washington. I know there are resolutions being proposed. There are law changes. I know, for instance, Hakeem Jeffries has a bill in that would outlaw chokeholds on a national basis. I think that is a worthy bill to take up immediately. But there are things that we need to do at the local level as well. I know our law enforcement here has been engaging in de-escalation training and making sure that we're working to understand what implicit bias is all about and how to serve communities of color. And I think we've got to make sure that level of training happens across the board. So this really is going to take engagement over a period of time. And I think, you know, folks are right to fear that this moment might slip away and slip out of the headlines, as it has so many times in the past. But what I've been telling these young people is, you know, you can keep this out front and center, and that we want to help, you know, channel the passion and peaceful protest that exists out there in the right direction. So I'm hoping we can continue to engage and, you know, make sure we bring together all aspects of our community in an ongoing conversation. It's got to happen.
Well, and speaking of the resolution from Congressman Jeffries that you mentioned, we got a question from a listener, Ariana, who says, do you support Congresswoman Presley's resolution condemning police brutality? Ariana also says, what should Congress do to address the issue of police brutality in this country? So two questions there from Ariana. The first one is the easier one. Do you support this resolution from Congresswoman Presley?
Yes, I do support that resolution on police brutality. And I think we've seen a number of colleagues sign on to it. I've been receiving calls and texts and emails about it. So I think this shows that, you know, folks are speaking out and are reaching their elected officials in a way that we can make a statement. But beyond, you know, a resolution, which doesn't necessarily have the force of law, we need to look at policies. And so one that I did mention was a bill from Hakeem Jeffries to outlaw chokeholds. I think that's got to be part of a bigger package of reforms that we can push forward. And so I think we need to put all ideas on the table. And, you know, I heard the words of the local police chief here in Manchester this week, who said that no one hates a bad cop as much as a good cop. And we have lots of good cops and upstanding members of law enforcement in our state. And they certainly need to have a seat at the table as we move forward. I think it's been tremendous the ways in which law enforcement has been engaging with protesters here and across the country, have been taking a knee when asked, have been listening, have been working hard to protect those who are safely protesting. So they are part of the solution.
Well, and we do talk with a lot of police on our show too, and we've heard from some who do worry such actions can wrongly tarnish everybody on the force. And I appreciate what you said, you know, nobody dislikes a bad cop more than a good cop. So what can you do in your role as a member of Congress, again, recognizing police are, you know, largely funded and controlled locally, but as a member of Congress, Congressman Pappas, what can you do to support so-called good cops?
Well, I think we need to look at ways in which we can identify those who, you know, are violating their oaths and ensure that there is accountability. And so whether it's, you know, creating you know, local commissions to make sure that, you know, bad cops are held accountable. You know, I think that's appropriate. And we've seen that implemented successfully in parts of the country. You know, at the federal level, you know, there is funding that goes to law enforcement. And so when you do have funding, you know, you can work to make sure that that goes into the right place. There's a big conversation that's going to happen about surplus military equipment going to state and local law enforcement. You know, some have decried the militarization of policing in this country. And so I think that's going to be a very robust conversation that happens in Congress moving forward.
Oh, that's very interesting. And I remember when that first started happening as wars in Iraq and Afghanistan shifted, there was a movement of surplus military equipment to cities and towns. I remember talking about the debates over so-called Bearcats a bunch of years ago and so forth. So are you saying, Congressman, that the federal government, including you, needs to kind of look at this trend and see if it is actually hurting, not helping?
That is one thing that is going to be on the table and part of the conversation. I think it's appropriate for us to look into that.
Interesting. You also mentioned training for police officers, and we've talked a lot recently about implicit bias training and so forth. Is there a role for Congress to fund that training, which I'm guessing, you know, cities and towns being strapped may not have the money to pay for such trainings?
Well, I think that's something we should take a look at, especially in this era where we're going to see state and local budgets severely disrupted by loss of revenue due to COVID-19 and the economic crisis. We've got to make sure that, you know, critical services can move forward. I know I've visited and, you know, spoken with folks who head up our police standards and training in New Hampshire. They do a tremendous job, but, you know, we have to make sure that training continues to evolve and is there, and we want to provide the financial support if needed for that. But I think absolutely in every part of the country, making sure that there is ongoing implicit bias training and de-escalation training is really crucial to making sure that our law enforcement is focused on community policing and understanding how to make sure they're doing their job appropriately.
I want to ask a couple more questions about this, Congressman, but also invite listeners to join us. Our number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. And we're talking this hour with Congressman Chris Pappas, a Democrat from the 1st District. And it's a great opportunity for you, exchange listeners, to talk with a member of Congress from New Hampshire about how you're feeling about all that's going on these days, from the protests to pandemic response and so forth. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Here's an email from Todd, Congressman, who says, tear gas is a chemical weapon banned in warfare. Would you support legislation that bans its use in the U.S.? Todd, thank you very much. And that's a salient topic given these protests, Congressman.
Well, I'd consider that. I think that, you know, absolutely we need to make sure that we keep people safe, including those who are peacefully protesting right now. And I've been deeply concerned with some of the scenes we've witnessed across the country. Where peaceful protests have been disrupted with tools like tear gas. You know, concerned about what we saw happen in front of the White House, where a peaceful crowd of protesters was cleared out for a photo op for the President of the United States. So we've got to make sure whatever we do moving forward that we are living up to our constitutional ideals, including the right for peaceful assembly. It's important that we hear these protesters and make sure that they can safely communicate their message and not be disrupted.
Well, we've heard from a lot of people who were upset about what happened at the White House. And an email from Jeff says, first comes mutual respect. Only after that comes justice and then peace. Every living president has condemned the actions of the current sitting president. A truly historical event, Jeff says. Congressman, what about your fellow members of Congress? I've already, you know, read statements from you that you're upset with President Trump. But what about your fellow members of Congress, Republicans and Democrats? How are all of you sort of talking about this moment?
Well, I think we're all doing our part to listen. But what we're seeing is a national conversation, really. This isn't isolated, you know, just to Minneapolis or certain pockets of the country. This is galvanizing communities of color and allies all across our nation. So what I've been hearing from, you know, my colleagues is that they're seeing the same thing in their districts, largely peaceful protests. We have seen, you know, acts of violence committed, and there is absolutely no place for that. And if you talk to the protest organizers, you'll know that they're doing everything they can to make sure that no one engages in those types of activities, because ultimately, that takes away from the very powerful message that they have to communicate. So, you know, my colleagues are seeing the same thing in their districts, and it's been a largely uplifting conversation, and I hope it continues to be. But we do also have to make sure that public safety is there, and that, you know, our communities are safe from some of the violence that has erupted in some of our larger cities.
Have you been able to attend, Congressman, or do you plan on attending any of the protests or vigils happening in New Hampshire?
I'd be happy to attend. And, you know, what I said to the protesters when I, you know, reached out to the organizers was that this was their event. And certainly I didn't want to, you know, upstage or take anything away from their message. I really feel that in my position right now, I do want to make sure I have an open mind and that I'm listening. Ultimately, I need to try to put myself in the shoes of these young Black and Brown activists who are speaking out. They have a different experience than I do, even growing up in the same city of Manchester. And so I really want to hear that right now, work to fully appreciate it, and hope to help creating a broader conversation.
Here's a Facebook message from Tom, who says, I have come to the conclusion that we no longer have a democratic form of government when two men, the president and Mitch McConnell, control any and all policy issues that get put forth. Congress seems to have no role or voice anymore in our value and policy decisions. What does Representative Pappas think? That's a really interesting comment, Tom. Thank you. And it does get to sort of how our government is set up and when people can put things forward and when they can block it. How much role or voice do you feel you have these days, Congressman Pappas?
Well, that is a big conversation. It gets to our founding, and our system wasn't set up for swift, easy change. You do have with a bicameral legislature where we have power shared between two political parties and an executive branch. It is hard to make sure that we can have all the pieces in place to move legislation through. And, you know, unfortunately, we've seen in the Senate Majority Leader McConnell blocking bill after bill after bill that has been passed on a bipartisan basis through the House over the last year and a half. There are hundreds of bills sitting on his desk. So I find that incredibly frustrating. But I also know that there's an election around the corner. And if folks don't like the direction that the Senate is going in and support some of the measures that we've been passing, say on background checks or the DREAM Act or an increase in the minimum wage, then there's an opportunity to change who's in power. But look, at the end of the day, we've got to, especially in this moment of national crisis, when we're talking about inequities that have existed for centuries, and it's about time we address them, we've got to find our sense of common purpose. And I think these protesters are demanding it. The health crisis that we're going through demands it. We've seen, four major bills addressing COVID-19 pass on a broad bipartisan basis. That's ultimately how the system should work to address major issues like this. And I hope we can find that footing and rise above, the traditional political posture when it comes to racial justice and some of the other things that are on our agenda moving forward.
How much is the situation that Tom describes just a function of divided government? The president's Republican, the Senate is Republican held, the House is Democratic held, and that's just the way it goes.
We've seen that happen in New Hampshire, and we don't see the same type of division. The parties aren't as entrenched, and I think it's because our elected officials are friendly with one another. They're more proximate to each other and each other's experiences. And there's no substitute for that. We've got to really work to overcome the differences that exist and see each other not as, enemies in political battle, but as fellow Americans who are working to move in the same direction. I find there are places in Congress where you can do that a lot more easily than others. I happen to serve on the Veterans Affairs Committee, and that's a space where there does seem to be a pervasive sense that we're all Americans and we're all in this together. And I hope on the major issues of the day, we can find that footing.
Here's another email that asks specifically what you can do, again, about this issue of police brutality. Giles writes, the legal principle of qualified immunity shields police from liability when they engage in misconduct and violate a citizen's constitutional rights. Giles says there are bills being proposed right now in Congress that would repeal this principle. Will you support those repeal efforts? Giles, thank you for writing in.
Well, I'm not familiar with the legislation, but I would absolutely take a look at that and make sure that we're talking with stakeholders, with folks who have been vocal on these issues and understand the ins and outs of the law better than I do. So I'd be happy to have that conversation about legislation that's pending. And I think this is a moment in time where we do need to put everything on the table and evaluate what's going to make a difference and ultimately stop the killing of Black and brown people at the hands of bad police officers.
How concerned are you, Congressman, that these mass gatherings are happening at a time when people are asking, whether they should not go because of social distancing and COVID-19? I mean, this virus has not gone away by any stretch.
Laura, I think that's an important point. And if you talk with public health experts, they will say that it's not appropriate for folks to be gathering close together in large numbers right now. We all have to be doing our part to social distance, to be wearing our masks when we're in public, or we're going to see this virus stage a pretty serious resurgence this summer or even into the fall. So it does give me great concern. I'm thankful that when I see, for instance, photos of the vigil that was held in Manchester, we saw most people wearing masks and staying far apart from one another. But look, we've got to make sure that we're lowering as much as possible the risk that exists to individuals out there. We've all made tremendous sacrifices the last few months, and what we can't afford to have happen is to be right back where we started at the beginning of this pandemic. So we've got to do all we can to do our own part. We all have personal responsibility to bring to bear to make sure that we're stopping the spread of this virus.
Well, after a short break, Congressman, we'll pivot to talking about the coronavirus and Congress's response. There is a lot to cover there, but you can continue to email us with your questions or comments about the protest movement as well. We're covering it all with Congressman Chris Pappas today. Our email address is exchange@nhpr.org, and our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Keep it right here. We'll be right back. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Our guest today is New Hampshire 1st District Congressman Chris Pappas. He's a Democrat from Manchester. We're talking about congressional action on the coronavirus pandemic and about the protest movement in response to the deaths of Black Americans at the hands of police. What are your questions for the congressman? Send them in by email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, use Twitter, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And congressman, as you well know, we recently passed the 100,000 mark in terms of COVID-19 deaths, a devastating loss. And we've talked a ton on this show about the mistakes, unpreparedness that marked the early phases, lack of equipment, lack of planning, and so forth. I'd like you to look forward, though, Congressman. What's your number one focus as a member of Congress to help the people of your district move forward in this struggle?
Well, that's a great question. This is an all-encompassing crisis, and this is first and foremost a public health crisis that has spawned a really deep and severe economic crisis. We've got to beat the health crisis first, though, if we can safely hope to get our economy back up on its feet. Many talk about a vaccine that's just over the horizon, and while there's promising research that is happening, we can't put all our eggs in that basket. So we've got to do all we can to make sure that testing continues to ramp up and that individuals are following our public health officials' lead, making sure that hand washing and mask wearing is happening across the board. So I think the testing continues to be something that we need to see more of. What's been so tragic here in New Hampshire is the way in which this virus has taken hold in our nursing homes and long-term care facilities. Most of the deaths that we're seeing are coming from those facilities. And so that speaks to not just the need to test once, but to test on a very regular basis to make sure that our workers and their families are safe, that those residents that might be in vulnerable categories are also protected. That takes a lot of resources. And I think we're just getting to the point where we have that capacity. The state has expanded its mobile testing teams as well as testing sites around the state. We have more labs that are able to do the actual lab work. So that's all moving in the right direction, but it was a long time coming. It took a few months to get to this point. And unfortunately, many Americans' lives were lost as a result. When it comes to the economic piece of this, we've got to make sure we're doing all we can to support the record number of individuals that are out of work right now. We saw, I think, the unemployment rate in April was around 17%, but it's probably much higher because there are a number of individuals that just dropped out of the workforce altogether. And we're seeing our small businesses under tremendous pressure right now. There have been significant programs that have been developed for our small businesses. including the Paycheck Protection Program. And it was really great to see the Senate pass the bipartisan bill that we passed in the House last week, which would extend the terms of the Paycheck Protection Program for these local businesses, provide them with some more flexibility. That's important so that they can weather the storm, but also so that they can retain their workers. And it's really crucial that workers stay connected to their employers during this period. If we continue to see disruption on that front, it makes it a lot harder to put people back to work over time. So we've got to look to meet the strain that our families are facing right now. Early on in this pandemic, 40% of those who earn less than $40,000 a year were unemployed. That number is even higher now. And so the economic pain that's being borne right now is increasingly on the shoulders of those who live paycheck to paycheck. And we've got to do all we can to
target. Let's talk about some of those. Yeah. The health, there's so much there. And just breaking it down, you mentioned the health piece. We've got to get that under control first. But you also mentioned the economic piece. And I definitely want to ask you about those paycheck, that paycheck protection plan. But to the nursing homes first, Congressman, since you mentioned that first, and you're right, nursing homes have been hit hard. Everybody knows that. As of Monday, the state has now tested all of New Hampshire's nursing homes. I heard something very interesting from our own Jason Moon here at NHPR last week. He was talking about the taking down of some of the emergency tents, the overflow COVID units at hospitals. And he said something that I thought was so important. It's almost like we in New Hampshire prepared for the wrong crisis. We were looking at Italy, we were looking at Spain, we were looking at the hospital crisis and the overflowing, that we saw in those countries. We were less prepared for a nursing home crisis. And in fact, that is indeed what we have seen. I thought that was a really profound point. And I wonder what you think about that, Congressman Pappas.
Well, I think there is a lot to learn about what's transpired the last couple months. And also, there's still information we need to know about this virus, how it spread, what does it mean if you have immunity? And we'll find some of that out over time. But I think clearly, New Hampshire is in a different category than, say, New York or even the Boston area because of the density that exists. But in spaces where folks are in close proximity to one another and you do have individuals who are in these vulnerable groups, that's where, the COVID-19 pandemic has hit New Hampshire the hardest. So it's very clear that as we move forward, we've got to focus on those vulnerable groups, and we've got to make sure that these facilities have testing on a regular basis. It's good that we've now tested everyone in our nursing homes, but we've got to keep doing it, and I think on a weekly basis, to make sure that residents and workers alike are protected.
Well, a friend of one of my sons works at a nursing home, and he said he's being tested at the beginning of every week. He gets a coronavirus test, and he's not even working directly with patients. He's at the front desk. I want to remind our listeners that you can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477, or email exchange at nhpr.org. It's your chance to talk with New Hampshire Congressman Chris Pappas. Again, our email address is exchange@nhpr.org. Talk to me a little bit more, Congressman, please, about the Paycheck Protection Program. This was a big deal when it rolled out, at the beginning of the pandemic, but now it's been criticized as unrealistic. Companies have complained that in order for their loans to be forgiven, they have to hire everybody back that they employed within a certain time frame. I know you've heard from employers that this doesn't make sense. Put yourself in the shoes of a restaurant owner. You're told now you can open at half capacity, but oh, by the way, you have to bring back all your employers. It just doesn't make sense. How has that program been changed, Congressman, or has it been changed?
Well, it has been changed, and we need to continue to have clarity on some of the rules around the Paycheck Protection Program for our businesses. But also this supplemental legislation that now has passed the House and Senate and hopefully will be signed by the president will provide that longer term flexibility that businesses need. Look, this was a brand new program that was created as part of the CARES Act. And so it did take several weeks to get this off the ground. And I think it's been successful in New Hampshire in part because our lending community has gone the extra mile, our banks and credit unions, to understand the rules that Treasury was putting out around the Paycheck Protection Program and how to connect their customers to the opportunity. These are low interest loans, and you can have them forgiven if you maintain payroll after a certain period of time. Initially, that window was 8 weeks. With the new bill, it will be 24 weeks. And that's important because we know it's going to take longer than 8 weeks, say to the end of June, for businesses to be back where they need to be. So when this was first passed, I think there was a lack of clarity and understanding around the economic impacts of this pandemic and how long moving forward our businesses would be in a state of suspended animation. Some of the positive notes on the Paycheck Protection Program are that the forgiveness of the loan can be prorated. And with this additional bill, there's more flexibility in the proportion that can be spent on payroll and other costs like overhead, utilities, rent and mortgage, and those things that are, really costly for our local businesses. So no local business has a plan for this. None have an insurance policy that covers a pandemic. And, very little have the cash cushion for it. Even in good times, our small businesses are day-to-day operations, but they are our major employers in New Hampshire. 99% of our employers in our state are small Main Street businesses, and we've got to make sure we meet their diverse needs. And I'm hopeful with additional changes, we can do that through this program.
Sure, because I'm putting myself in the shoes of a store owner or a restaurant owner, and again, you can only invite half capacity that you used to have. And even if you could invite full capacity, a lot of people aren't ready to go shopping or out to a restaurant again. Well,
that's true. And part of what we're facing here, unlike past recessions where we could prime the pump and put money in people's pockets, you could get them to go out and spend, and it would help mitigate the impacts and ripple effect that a recession can have across the economy. But right now, while we do need to ensure that folks can meet their basic living expenses, rent and mortgage and the grocery bill, people aren't necessarily going to go back out. And that is appropriate given what we're all experiencing right now and the fact that we do have to do our part of social distancing and changing our behavior. So that has a really tough impact on our business community. And that's why these programs are important to make sure that they can weather the storm.
You know, speaking of restaurants, you're the owner of the Puritan Backroom in Manchester, your family's restaurant and catering business. How has the Puritan been affected by all this, Congressman?
Well, they have, unfortunately, they had a bit of an issue. They had an electrical fire and had to close for some renovations for a few weeks. But they've been doing the curbside pickup, takeout. And it's been very orderly. Thankfully, they have a big parking lot, so they can do it in an orderly fashion. They haven't opened for the outside dining. While I'm not involved in the day-to-day of the business, obviously I've been talking with my family members and have been by to pick up an order here and there. And, they're doing the best they can with it. But, they're concerned about making sure that their workers are protected, are masked up, are wearing gloves all the time. And that there's no contact with customers who are, pulling in to pick up their order. So all of our businesses are having to innovate and adapt to this new environment right now. That costs some money for the supplies that they need to do this. Our businesses are going to be suffering. That's why it's important that we look at, additional loan programs and tax credits to help them make it through this tough time.
So they're doing takeout, not yet the outside dining. How has being a small business owner, Congressman, kind of affected your views and your votes at all this legislation that we've seen aimed at helping small businesses through the pandemic? You kind of have a unique view there.
It gives you an understanding for the pressures that local businesses go through, even if there are a lot of people coming through the door, it's a struggle each and every day. And so, I appreciate the diversity that exists in our small business community. We have a lot of hospitality businesses in New Hampshire that have been hurt, but there are other types of businesses that are feeling the crunch as well. I've been on Zoom calls, several a week with hundreds of business leaders over the last couple of months, talking with them about their experiences and You know, it's been instructive, and we've tried to take those stories and help inform our work in Washington. And I think the bill we passed last week, modifying the Paycheck Protection Program, will strike the right tone for a number of these businesses that need additional help.
Let's take a call, Congressman. And again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. David's in Keene. Hi, David. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, you're welcome.
Go ahead, David.
Well, I am very concerned at the whole, seems to be a whole movement, but for some reason it seems to be kind of Republican-oriented, of people wanting to, they're tired of accommodating this virus with social distancing. They're tired of wearing masks. They're tired of these things, even though the virus is still going on and we really need to keep doing these things. But I'm kind of shocked that people are just saying, well, I've had enough of that. I'm going to pretend the virus doesn't exist. I saw a news photo of 500 people in a lake in Arkansas and not wearing masks, all huddling together. And I wonder if Congress is doing anything to really be supportive of continuing to take the measures we need to avoid getting infected.
David, I really appreciate the call. And is this a congressional responsibility, Congressman? It seems to me governors have been more at the forefront of this.
David, I think that's an important question. I think as elected officials, we all should model good behavior and not seek to politicize those public health steps that we all need to take that are going to curb the spread of this virus. By wearing a mask, it's not necessarily for us that we're wearing the mask, it's for everyone else. And with what the CDC research has shown is that, you know, when two individuals close to one another are wearing a mask, it cuts the risk of infection down to the low single digits. And that's exactly why we should be doing that. So I really am concerned about the politics that seems to have come into this space. The president is guilty of it, and other leaders are guilty of it too. I think we've got to make sure that we're vigilant right now. We can't let up on this, or this virus is going to stage a really severe comeback. And, we're going to lose more Americans' lives as a result of it. So we do have a responsibility to model that good behavior. We also have a responsibility to make sure that entities like the CDC and the NIH are fully funded so that they are well equipped to, continue their research and continue to put out, information that Americans can use at this time to protect themselves and their families.
So Congress can't, to get to David's specifics, Congress can't tell people wear a mask. Congress can model good behavior, as you said, Congressman Pappas, and give the proper funding to the proper agencies so that they can carry out their work in research and so forth. But in terms of the, layers of responsibility, you can't really tell people wear a mask.
I think we're seeing different policies state by state on this front. And look, this virus isn't hitting the United States coast to coast in a uniform manner. And so it is appropriate to tailor restrictions and policies depending on where there are hotspots. But, short of a national standard on mask wearing, the CDC has been clear that masks are recommended. And so I think it's appropriate that everyone is wearing a mask in public. On recent trips to Washington, it's now required for air travel by Southwest Airlines and other airlines that you wear a mask while in the airport and on the flight. And I think that is a really good step forward. I'd like to see that in other areas as well.
Well, and here's an email from Jan who says, according to the CDC, about 35% of COVID-19 positive people are asymptomatic. Jan says, how can relaxing safety measures, travel, and getting back to normal ensure any degree of safety? Thank you, Jan, for the email. And I did want to ask you, Congressman, as summer approaches, as people do get sick of dealing with this thing, and it's understandable, what concerns you the most?
Well, I think one of the initial concerns I had about this time period that we're in right now, where restrictions are being relaxed, is what does our testing capability look like? And we have expanded testing. We've got more ground to cover to make sure that the supplies will continue to be there. But we do want to make sure that Americans on a broad basis have access to testing. That's one way that we can identify this virus and help contain it and do the contact tracing that's appropriate when someone does get infected. But absolutely a great point. You know, I've seen statistics, 40, even maybe 50% in some cases of individuals who have COVID-19 but are asymptomatic. And we know that the virus can be transmitted when you're pre-symptomatic. And so that presents a much more significant challenge than many other viruses that we've seen become, global pandemics in the past, and why the testing component of this is so vigilant, but why there's no substitute for making sure that social distancing is maintained and mask wearing is done when folks are in public.
Got a couple more questions from listeners for you, Congressman, that I will share with you after a short break. Another question about policing standards and a couple more questions about the economic stimulus bills that Congress has passed. So all that's coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, we're talking with New Hampshire 1st District Congressman Chris Pappas. He's a Democrat from Manchester. We've been reviewing the congressional response to the coronavirus pandemic and discussing the demonstrations happening across the country and in our state. Exchange listeners, it's a great chance for you to tell Congressman Pappas what you'd like Congress to know about what this pandemic has been like for you, or what you think the federal response should be to the concerns raised by protesters around the country. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook, use Twitter, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Congressman Pappas, we got a question for you before the show from a listener, Cole, who says, what can be done to help local governments handle the lost revenue they're facing due to the pandemic? And Cole, it's a great question. Thank you.
Well, this is something that we addressed in a bill called the HEROES Act that passed through the House about 3 weeks ago now. And I've been hearing from this from county commissioners, mayors, city and town officials, as well as state officials, deeply concerned about lost revenue. Because as this pandemic moves forward, we know that, revenues from rooms and meals taxes, even property taxes will decrease during this pandemic. Business taxes certainly will be down. Those are some of the major ways that we fund government at the state, county, and local level here in New Hampshire. So what we don't want to see in the middle of a pandemic is a disruption in critical services, police, fire, EMS, education, public health workers and services. That is so crucial moving forward. So the support that was provided in one of the first packages, the CARES Act, that came to New Hampshire, $1.25 billion, has been put to good use for response efforts. But those funds cannot be flexed to deal with the lost revenue situation that New Hampshire and our local governments are facing right now. That's why we want to make sure that in the next bipartisan compromise, we get significant support for our cities, towns, counties, and states so that they can deal with this and not have to either make the tough choice of raising taxes or cutting vital services during this pandemic. We owe it to our first responders, to the frontline workers who are out there each and every day, to the teachers who, even though the building might be closed, are delivering education to our kids right now. That needs to all continue and move forward uninterrupted. And that's why significant resources need to be devoted to this. And the federal government is really the backstop for that.
So that's the HEROES bill. Is that what you're talking about? That would,
yeah, that's part of the HEROES Act. And, Annie Custer and I led a letter with every mayor, every county commission, and lots of other local officials from across New Hampshire in a bipartisan basis who were calling for this. Mitch McConnell has made the statement that we should let states go bankrupt. Our governor and others have pushed back against that, rightfully. And we've got to make sure that we're doing all we can to support vital services.
Well, it's been widely reported that Senate Republicans also oppose this HEROES Act, partly because it doesn't include liability protection for employers. The business community, as I'm sure you know, because you're a businessman, is concerned about a potential spike in lawsuits as businesses and offices reopen. So what's your take on that? Is that a valid concern that should be included, liability protection?
Well, we have to make sure that businesses are following the public health rules and regulations and that employees are protected. I think that's really vital, especially as employees are working close to one another, are interfacing with the public. They need the equipment that's necessary to stay safe on the job. But look, if all those metrics are being met, I think let's see what proposal is put out on the table. It shouldn't be something that goes beyond the time horizon of the immediate crisis that we're in right now. Some might see it as an opportunity to, you know, fundamentally change those liability laws. But, you know, I think I'd be interested to see what proposals would be out there on that front. I don't believe, you know, we've seen any legislation that's gotten down into the details. But I know this is a concern that our businesses are experiencing right now. But what's really important is that everyone is following those public health guidelines to try to keep people safe.
Let's take another call, Congressman. This is Adam in Berlin. Hi, Adam. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just in the last month, I opened a restaurant on Main Street, Berlin. The city has been amazing. Working with them, the code enforcement, City Hall has, you know, been so generous to give me a tax incentive to open because there's such a lack of businesses that are willing to take the chance in Berlin. With that said, I own this building. I put a lot of money into this. I left a job with the federal government at the prison, and it's so disheartening that all these different programs are supposedly out for small businesses, and I haven't been able to partake of any of that because I just started. I opened in the midst of this pandemic.
Wow.
So I didn't have any employees beforehand, but I understand why that might be the case. But my issue is that we have New Hampshire banks that are unwilling to take risks, you know, and I understand I'm a startup, but I've got the building is paid for at capital. I have, you know, there's capital, you know, to back up any small bridge loan that I'm looking to get. And it's just, I don't know where to go from here. And it's really difficult because the city is supporting the people. The wonderful people of Berlin have been so, so great in their support. But these banks, like, it's like all the outside influences that are supposed to be community banks. You know, I bank with Service Credit Union. I've been with them for 5 years, and they wouldn't even write up a loan, you know, like any proposals whatsoever. And
wow,
it's just
so Adam. Really yeah, and I'm going to jump in with the congressman, but tell me the name of your restaurant. I'm struck by the fact that you opened a restaurant in the middle of a pandemic. My goodness.
Yeah, it's Exile Burritos. It's quick service. You know, Mexican restaurant,
yeah.
and it works with the pandemic and everything. It's takeout, but yeah. So that's one of the reasons I step forward and continue to go on with this plan that I've been working on for the last year. And I knew Berlin would support it.
Wow.
So it's been a blessing, but at the same time, it's hard to get the funding that is needed to kind of move forward with finishing everything
and I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm going to let you go just because I only have a couple more minutes with the congressman. But for you specifically, I would call Congresswoman Custer's office because you're in Congressional District 2 and she's your member of Congress. But for the general struggle, Congressman Pappas, I have heard from other small business people, independent people who only work for themselves, that, you know, these programs that Congress has set up, the unemployment insurance and the business support, are fine for the sort of standard, you know, Monday through Friday, you know, 10 employees business. But there are a lot of different cases that these programs just don't seem to to cover effectively? I was just talking to a friend the other day who's in a similar position to you, Adam. What do you think, Congressman? It's tough. You make these parameters, and then there's all these people that don't fit in the parameters, so they're not getting helped.
Well, I appreciate what Adam's going through, and I can't imagine what it's like to try to get a new business off the ground at this tough time. I'll say this, my family's business opened up as the U.S. was entering World War I and right at the beginning of the Spanish flu pandemic, and somehow they made it through. So, you know, I wish you all the best. What we do have to make sure is that you get connected to supportive services that are out there. If you haven't reached out to the Small Business Development Center, they have been doing some great advocacy and work on behalf of local businesses, including startups that need assistance at this tough time. As I mentioned before, our local lenders have generally been pretty good, so I'm sorry that you haven't had a good experience there. But I would encourage you to reach out to Annie Custer's office, or you can call my office at 285-4300, and we're happy to think a little bit about your specific case. I know one of the things that the state has been able to do with its funding that it received through the CARES Act is to set up a Main Street business fund of grants for $400 million for existing businesses. They do hope to be able to carve out some support for startups and new businesses as well. So I would check with the State Department of Business and Economic Affairs to see what might be available through that agency as well. So hopefully we can get some help your way, but we wish you all the best. And next time I'm up in Berlin, I'll have to stop by for a burrito.
Well, yeah, Adam, hang in there, because I am always in the North Country in the summer. So same here. Good luck to you. And I would definitely check out some of those resources that Congressman Pappas mentioned. We talked earlier about funding for communities, and that's something that you said, Congressman, you're pushing for, given that communities have lost a lot of their tax revenue. Joel writes, are there state and federal resources available to school districts that want to extend their current breakfast and lunch programs through July and August, given the current unemployment situation? Thank you so much for writing, Joel. And Congressman, it has been heartening to see those school buses continuing to deliver meals to poor families, even though school is, you know, over in a lot of places. So can you answer Joel's question?
Well, the nutrition and food aspects of this crisis are severe. You know, New Hampshire was a state already where 1 in 10 individuals experience food insecurity at some point during the year. And we have seen a tremendous strain on our food pantries and our food bank. They've been getting assistance from the National Guard to help ramp up their efforts. But it's critically important that as we get into these summer months, we make sure that students in particular are still connected to meals. That has traditionally happened through local organizations, including the Boys and Girls Clubs across our state, as well as our community action programs. So those resources will be out there. But I would look to some of the funding that's come through the CARES Act to New Hampshire to see if those dollars would be able to be used for that purpose. I think it's definitely something we have to consider as we move into these summer months. And we know that hunger is already such a severe problem in New Hampshire.
Gail sent us an email. She says, our church applied for and received the exact amount needed for salaries and related staff expenses, not including utilities, for 8 weeks. Now that the PPP is extended, can we modify our application to cover more weeks? Oh, I bet that's a question a lot of people have. Congressman, we all hope this would be over in 8 weeks, and voila, here we are. So what about Gail's question? Gail, thank you and good luck.
Well, thanks for the question, Gail. And I've heard that concern. That's one of the reasons why we passed that Paycheck Protection Flexibility Act. As I said, the Senate passed it yesterday. We hope the president will sign it into law soon. If and when he does, you should contact your local lender because as part of that bill, you'll be able to, negotiate, longer terms if needed, up to 24 weeks.
Here's an email from Matt that came in at the beginning of the show, Congressman, but I saved it for the end. Are you ready? Matt says, I'm a social studies teacher in Durham and I teach civics. Being in your second year of your first term, what have you learned about working in D.C., working with others from different parts of the country, working with members of the other party as well as your own? And Matt, I love the question. Thank you for writing in. And Congressman, go ahead.
Well, I have had developed some great working relationships with members across the aisle, especially through my committee work, where I find that the temperature is a lot lower. You know, the bright lights of the camera might not be shining on us, and we can have the types of conversations that are meaningful and constructive and can produce bipartisan legislation that can pass. So I've done that on the Veterans Committee, also the Transportation Committee. Just yesterday, we announced a big highway bill that's going to begin moving through the House, and we'll have hearings and a markup of that over the next few weeks in our committee. So the commitment is really there from members on both sides of the aisle to try to get it right and to try to do the right thing. And there are some incredible people who serve. I think it's hard to see that sometimes through the national media anyway, that focuses on conflict and division and the shiny objects that exist in politics. We've got to get back to basics as best we can. And I think the personal relationships you can develop help open those doors.
Well, Congressman, we did not get to prescription drug prices or transportation funding and your work to make college affordable. We'll talk about that the next time. For now, thank you very much for being with us today. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you, Laura, and stay safe.
That's New Hampshire 1st District Congressman Chris Pappas. He's a Democrat from Manchester. Thanks for being with us this morning. I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.